I don't understand how one can be a Christian and discriminate against anybody. I see no evidence that gay and lesbian people can be changed or ought to be changed. It's part of God's creation.
Gay is natural, gay is good.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. The Salvation Army's near coup is exposed. Gay supporter Bishop John Spong speaks from behind the kangaroo curtain, and a collector shares some queer music from the 1970s. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm John Beaupre.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending July 14th, 2001. The leak of a Salvation Army internal memo to the Washington Post this week brought to the fore concerns that the Bush administration's eagerness to fund religious group social services could mean taxpayer-supported discrimination. The memo made it appear that the Salvation Army's current million-dollar lobbying effort for Bush's so-called Charitable Choice Initiative was conditioned on an administration promise to shield religious grantees from state and local laws prohibiting sexual orientation employment discrimination or requiring health benefits for employees' domestic partners. Those local laws come into play because federal funds for social services are generally apportioned to the states and administered by them. Although all such laws exempt religious activities per se, compliance is generally required for provision of government-funded social services. 3 years ago, the Salvation Army gave up $3.5 million in grants from the city of San Francisco rather than comply with its equal benefits ordinance. The White House immediately denied any quid pro quo arrangement with the Salvation Army and quickly aborted its study of the proposed administrative regulation the Salvation Army memo mentioned. However, the Charitable Choice Bill in the Congress, H.R. 7, includes a provision that would do exactly what the Salvation Army wanted. Openly gay Massachusetts Democrat Barney Frank tried to remove that provision in the House Judiciary Committee, but his amendment failed on a party-line vote. He says he'll introduce a similar amendment when the bill comes to a floor vote in August.
A coalition of lesser-known U.S. religious rights groups this week announced their intention to amend the federal constitution to reserve legal marriage exclusively for heterosexual couples. As drafted, the entire amendment would read, "Marriage in the United States shall consist only of the union of a man and a woman. Neither this constitution or the constitution of any state or federal law shall be construed to require that marital status or the legal incidence thereof be conferred upon unmarried couples or groups." Amending the U.S. Constitution is a process that takes years. Only one amendment has been added in the last 30 years, and only 27 since the nation's founding. Also, regulation of marriage in the U.S. is controlled by the individual states rather than the federal government. But the American Civil Liberties Union warned members of Congress that enactment of the so-called marriage amendment could eliminate all legal protections for non-marital relationships, including domestic partnership laws in 8 states and over 100 cities, and could even stop local governments from deciding benefits for their own employees. In 1986, the Congress enacted the so-called Defense of Marriage Act, denying any federal recognition to non-heterosexual relationships. More than two-thirds of the states have legislation to deny legal recognition to gay and lesbian marriage another state might perform. This week, Missouri Governor Bob Holden signed one such measure into law, replacing an earlier version struck down in the courts. Only Vermont's civil unions offer the state-level benefits of marriage to same-gender couples, but even they do not extend to more than 1,000 federal-level benefits of marriage.
In Canada, a Nova Scotia Supreme Court judge has struck down the provincial law prohibiting adoptions by unmarried couples. Justice Deborah Gass found the restriction violates the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. The case was brought by a lesbian couple in Halifax who each have several children they had been barred from co-adopting. Now, Nova Scotia children of unmarried parents can register their relationships with both parents, receive maintenance from both, and inherit in the absence of a will. Three other Canadian provinces already extend equal adoption rights to same-gender couples.
In India, police have arrested 8 staff of 2 HIV/AIDS groups on charges of running a sex club and child prostitution ring and of propagating and indulging in unnatural sex. The incident began when 2 staffers doing outreach work in a cruisy Lucknow park were picked up in a sweep. Police then raided the offices of the Nas Foundation International and Bahrosa Trust, shutting them down and arresting Nas's director and program director. The groups vehemently deny the charges, but those arrested have been refused bail. Although the AIDS organizations have worked in conjunction with government bodies in the past, they have not yet been able to resume their efforts.
Those arrested in the violent attack on Yugoslavia's first Pride March have gotten off easy. The march in Belgrade has been called Yugoslavia's Stonewall. A mob reported as more than 1,000 men attacked about 30 marchers with bottles, eggs, stones, and clubs while bystanders cheered them on. 7 marchers and 7 police officers were injured. Police picked up 32 alleged assailants, but only 20 were handed over to a judge. According to one report, only 11 were sentenced, none to more than 30 days in jail. According to another report, only 4 were actually punished, and that only by being fined. This week, a Belgrade newspaper published a poll finding that more than 3/4 of Serbians believe gays and lesbians are sick, with nearly half saying they would immediately end any contact with a person on learning they were lesbian or gay.
In Senegal, the Interior Ministry is trying to prevent a planned gay and lesbian gathering in Dakar. The ministry released a statement saying preventative measures were taken so that such a demonstration is not organized on national territory. Officials warned hotels and other venues not to support a gay and lesbian gathering because it would offend morals in the overwhelmingly Muslim country.
Back in Europe, the big annual Pepsi Island youth music event is known as Hungary's Woodstock, but the mayor of a district in Budapest inserted an anti-gay clause in the city's contract for its part of the festival. The clause says, "No homosexual education programs under any name or programs under any other title shall take place." The International Lesbian and Gay Association, ILGA, claims this violates Hungary's own constitution as well as its international agreements and has organized an international letter-writing protest. ILGA fears the clause will be used to exclude 4 gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, and feminist groups that have been granted free access to the festival. Those groups are considering asking PepsiCo to withdraw its sponsorship of the event. Mayor István Tarlós wrote in a letter to festival organizers that the exclusion was necessary for the protection of young visitors, while adding that, "Unfortunately, I cannot ban homosexuals from visiting the island because that would really be discrimination." Budapest is usually considered to be the most tolerant area of Hungary.
The annual tennis tournament at Wimbledon is usually a model of British propriety, but surprise winner Goran Ivanišević of Croatia this week described a line judge who made an unfavorable call as looking like a faggot. The remark came not in the heat of the moment, but in a press conference an hour after his ultimate victory. A number of reporters present reportedly laughed. Most media either ignored the remark or buried it deep in their stories. The Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, outraged at the media response, noted that Ivanišević had used the same slur earlier this year. Open lesbian and 6-seed Amélie Mauresmo of France was upset in the 3rd round at Wimbledon by little-known Tamarine Tunasugarn of Thailand.
The U.S. Academy of Television Arts and Sciences this week announced nominees for its Emmy Awards, the top honors for U.S. television. NBC's gay-led sitcom Will and Grace was once again the comedy leader with nods in a dozen categories, including Best Comedy and nominations for all 4 of its main characters. ABC's biography of gay icon Judy Garland topped all miniseries and TV movies with 13 nominations. Now-defunct lesbian favorite Xena Warrior Princess was the only syndicated program to be nominated. Openly lesbian comic Ellen DeGeneres, who will host the awards presentation in September, was nominated for Best Special and Best Individual Performance in a Special for her turn on HBO in Ellen DeGeneres: The Beginning. But Showtime's popular version of the British series Queer as Folk came up empty.
And finally, Grammy-winning rocker Melissa Etheridge has been openly lesbian for years, but only now has she released a love song specifically directed to a woman. She told Reuters that it had been important to her to intentionally keep her lyrics non-gender specific because she didn't want to narrow her music. But her new album, Skin, includes the song It's Only Me with the lines, I found a little angel who had fallen from the sky, and I took that little angel and I taught her how to fly. Etheridge said, I'm making a sexual reference to a woman here, and that's really the first time, and to me, that's a big deal. Etheridge is currently very happy in her new relationship with actress Tammy Lynn Michaels of the now-defunct sitcom Popular.
That's News Wrap for the week ending July 14th, 2001. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm John Beaupre.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
In my book, Virtually Normal, An Argument About Homosexuality, I explore some strongly held positions about homosexuality in Western society, something that this program has been doing for years. Hi, I'm Andrew Sullivan. From Auckland, New Zealand, to Malmo, Sweden, from Chicago to Costa Rica, listeners all over the world tune in to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine, for information, entertainment, and up-to-the-minute news from lesbian and gay communities around the world.
A queer music collector goes on a quest for vintage gay rock later in the program. The theological views of Newark, New Jersey Episcopal Bishop John Shelby Spong have created controversy ever since 1989, when he ordained a partnered openly gay man. And he created a major stir in Australia just last month. A request to have the now-retired bishop speak in Brisbane Anglican churches on June 24th was denied, ostensibly because it happened to coincide with Archbishop Peter Hollingsworth's last official church function before assuming the post of Governor General. Hollingsworth's chaplain, Barry Greaves, told reporters that allowing Bishop Spong to preach would also appear to be giving his views the church's official seal of approval. The ban was supported by Sydney's new Archbishop, Dr. Peter Jensen, who called Spong's theology parasitic on the Scriptures and on the gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ. Rejected by his own denomination, Spong addressed a large group at Brisbane's Albert Street Uniting Church. He then asked to attend the Stonewall Sunday service at the local queer-affirming Metropolitan Community Church so that he could apologize directly to a group of gay and lesbian Christians for the homophobic religious leaders in their country. Spong spoke with correspondent John Frame there about why his visit down under was causing such a firestorm.
Bishop John Shelby Spong, you're here visiting Australia. You're involved with the Anglican Church. Yes. And you're considered to be controversial. And it seems to me that you're controversial because you accept people who love.
I think that's right. I think Jesus is rather controversial. Remember, they put him to death for his witness. I don't understand how one can be a Christian and discriminate against anybody. And yet in the history of the church, we've discriminated against people of color, we've discriminated against mentally ill people, we've discriminated against left-handed people, we've discriminated against women, and we're still discriminating against gay and lesbian people, and my hope is that we can strike a blow for freedom and not allow that to happen. That is not in touch with who the God I meet in Jesus is. And I must say that when I come to Australia, I feel like I'm in a time warp. I mean, you have the new Roman Catholic Archbishop of Sydney saying that gay and lesbian people who are working for the rights of gay and lesbian people in a political way aren't welcome to receive communion in his church. I think that's an incredible statement. I think he ought to be ashamed of himself, and I think it makes me ashamed of the gospel. And when I hear homophobic statements coming out of my own church, the Anglican Church, particularly in the Diocese of Sydney, Archdiocese of Sydney, I'm really embarrassed for the cause of Christ. So I want to come to a gay community and say there's another part of the Anglican Church that is not tied up in that homophobia, that accepts the words that Jesus spoke, that invite everybody to come unto him just as they are. And that's a witness that I hope to make. It does make you controversial in those closed and conservative church circles.
It's been suggested to me that the number of people within the Catholic Church and the Anglican Church who won't accept gay men or lesbians as part of their community are actually quite small, and that there's an encouragement to stay with their churches and to weather it out. Would you encourage that?
Well, I think you always do better to work from within than from outside, and I think that's the only way institutions ever change. The fact is that there are a large number of gay people in the priesthood of the Catholic and Anglican Church, many of them closeted and many of them quite homophobic in their public stances. I find that intolerable, but I still think that's one of the things that we have to do. I'm not in favor of outing people. I think people have the right to announce who they are in whatever way they wish. But I must tell you, when people use their closets as a place to attack other gay and lesbian people, I think that they are treading on very thin ice.
You've recently released a book as well, and that's part of the reason why you're here. You're promoting that work. What does that particularly aim to do? What's that work aimed at?
Well, the book is entitled Here I Stand, My Struggle for a Christianity of Integrity, Love, and Equality. And it's basically an autobiography. It's my personal story. I grew up in an evangelical Anglican church in the southern part of the United States. And that church taught me that segregation was the will of God. It taught me that women were second-class citizens who couldn't be priests or bishops. It taught me that Jewish people were evil and all other religions were not to be respected. Only Christianity was a respectable religion. And it taught me that homosexual people were evil or mentally sick and needed to be cured or converted. Now, that's what Christianity looked like to me when I was a child. And it was interesting that every time one of those prejudices was being discussed, the Bible was quoted to prove that the prejudice was right. So you have to fight against this attitude, and then you have to fight against the Bible being quoted to support these prejudices. And the story of my life is the story of how I came out of a segregated world to the honor of being named public enemy number one of the Ku Klux Klan in Edgecombe County, North Carolina. Not a big venue, but it was a powerful venue. And I know what it means to have my children threatened at night by KKK calls. They were going to rape my daughters the next day and that sort of thing. I know what death threats are all about. And I also came from being a very male chauvinist into supporting women in every area of the church's life. And I'm very proud that my branch of the Anglican Church today has 9 women bishops. And more than 50% of our future clergy studying for the priesthood today are women. So that battle is over. And I'm very proud that I've led my church into a new understanding of Jewish-Christian relations. And I hope into a better understanding of how you appreciate Buddhists and Hindus and Muslims and the other great religions of the world. And when I retired as Bishop of the Diocese of Newark just last year, 35 of my clergy were out of the closet gay and lesbian priest. 31 of them lived openly with their partners, and I've yet to have a complaint. And I think we've won that battle too in the United States, in the last general convention of our church in America, by about a 75% majority. Our church voted that we must reach out and support what they call non-traditional unions. That's code language, but that really meant gay and lesbian people. So it's an enormous step forward. I ordained the first gay man who was open and honest about being a gay man and who lived openly with a partner in 1989. There was enormous negative reaction around the world, but we set about to change the attitude, and we've changed that attitude. They're gay clergy, very open in the United States today, and I'm very proud of that. I hope that's a mark of what it will be throughout the church. We have gay clergy all over the church today, but they're not all honest. And I would bet that in the history of the Christian faith, more than 50% of all the ordained people, popes, cardinals, archbishops, bishops, priests, pastors, I would bet that more than 50% of them have been gay men.
And that could be an indication also of the nature of those people being caring and nurturing, perhaps.
I think they've made an enormous contribution to the life of the church, and I think the church ought to honor that and wake up and stop denigrating it. We still have groups connected with churches that say they're in the business of changing gay people so that they will become heterosexual. There's not a bit of scientific data to support that point of view. And I think that's fraudulent. I think what they're really doing is treading on the prejudices and the fears of people. You know, when you grow up gay in our society, you grow up knowing that you are looked down upon by the society, condemned by the society, feared by the society. And so the desire to be someone who is not going to be looked down on, beat up, feared, or whatever, is powerful. And for a church to play on that, you know, we used to tie the left hands of little children behind their backs so they'd grow up to be normal, right-handed people. We didn't understand the variety of humanity. That's what the church needs to recognize. And, you know, I think the time has come for us to say that those organizations need to be scrutinized by authorities so that their claims can be validated or dismissed. I see no evidence that gay and lesbian people can be changed or ought to be changed. It's part of God's creation. We don't try to change left-handed people anymore. We ought not to try to change homosexual people. I remember when a program was being done in the United States on me by 60 Minutes, that this woman, one of my critics, was being interviewed, and it was really kind of funny. She said that all homosexuals ought to submit themselves to Jesus and be cured. And the person interviewing her said, "Do you think you could be changed into being a homosexual?" And I don't think she had ever confronted that question before, and so she looked like a deer caught in somebody's headlights. And she sort of twisted in the wind there for a minute and then tried to change the subject. But you know, it's that sort of irrationality. Prejudice is always irrational.
That was retired American Episcopal Bishop John Shelby Spong speaking with John Frame in Brisbane, Australia. As Spong's book tour reached New Zealand, his appearance at one venue was protested by a small group of fundamentalists who said they were praying for the souls of those listening to him.
If there's something to be learned from examining the past, it's that institutions change, or else they do not last. Now you are such a dinosaur in the ancient ways you think. And if you do not soon adapt, you too will be extinct. You say that gays and lesbians have fallen from God's grace, and tacitly you sanction all the violence that we face. You distort the Bible's words to support your platitudes. But bigotry is not a very Christian attitude.
Hi, this is Greg Louganis, and you're listening to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine.
Gay and lesbian rock musicians have certainly become more audible in recent years, from independent bands like Pansy Division and the Butchies to mainstream performers like Melissa Etheridge and Sir Elton John. But there have been openly gay rock musicians almost since the time of Stonewall. Musical archaeologist Larry Roberts unearths a couple of rare queer tunes.
Recently, I've been on a quest for early gay rock records. These recordings are notable for their idealism, that early 70s first blush of gay lib, and lack of irony, a quality rare today. This is especially true of Everyone Involved, a British folk rock group whose songs on their 1972 record Either/Or alternate between songs with choruses of Gay is Good and No Lie, anti-car songs, a sample lyric, A Pedestrian is a Person. The actual record is reputed to have been a pressing of 60, with 6 known to exist. It was recorded by members of a commune who gave away copies for free. My copy of the recording is a multi-gen tape.
Gay is natural, gay is good, gay is wonderful, gay people should all come to.
Not to say that there isn't pleasure in music that nudges you with its elbow, and not so subtly, but more sublime is the pleasures of music that invites you to join hands and dance merrily in a circle. Not to say that the musicians of the 1970s were devoid of intentional humor. Chris Robison's 1973 self-released record on Gypsy Frog Records, Chris Robison and His Many Hand Band, certainly has a playful sense with the catchy number Looking for a Boy Tonight.
Looking for a boy tonight.
Robison was in Elephant's Memory, the Lower East Side band that backed up John and Yoko, though he was in it during a later post-Apple period and appears on their 1974 RCA release, Angels Forever. His song, I'm Gonna Stay With My Baby Tonight, was included on Ronnie Spector's awful 1980 punk album Siren, produced by Jenny Ravan. And he was also involved in the New York Dolls and plays on the Tokyo Dolls Live record. Robison's second solo record, released in 1974 and also on the Gypsy Frog label, is called Manchild. The only copy I know of is damaged, though. Please, if anyone has a copy of the record by his later band, Stumble Bunny, let me know. Just think, from 1972 to now, gay musicians have gone from singing Gay is Good, at a time when most of society didn't think so, to singing The Homosexual is Criminal, as Vaginal Davis sings on Pedro Muriel and Esther's album. But both groups are singing counter-establishment songs. It's just that who the establishment is has changed over the years. And if everyone involved haven't become car-driving guppies, I bet they'd be willing to join in with Vaginal Davis on the chorus of Closet Case. For This Way Out in San Francisco, I'm Larry Roberts.
And next time on This Way Out, Chris Wilson and J.D. Doyle will have new words and music from three of the latest CDs by openly queer artists in the audiophile. Thanks for tuning into This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, John Beaupre, Graham Underhill, Chris Ambage, Brian Nunes, Jason Lynn, Rex Walkner, John Frame, and Larry Roberts contributed program material. Romanofsky and Phillips performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can also hear This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. Just point your browser to www.planetout.com and click first on Multimedia, then on Radio. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded through designated contributions by Uncommon Cloud Visa card holders who've chosen This Way Out and through direct charitable donations from our listeners around the world. For an urgent message about This Way Out's critical financial situation, please visit our webpage at thiswayout.org, email us at tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on KRUX Las Cruces, New Mexico, WHRW Binghamton, New York, Planet FM, Auckland, New Zealand, and more than 125 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Do stay tuned.